Welcome to the Weight Room Wealth Podcast, where we use neuroscience, exercise science, and creative business strategy to help you condition yourself for success. If you like what you hear in this show, go to weightroomwealth.com and start learning the science of success for free with our free video masterclass. I'm your host, Sean Light. Now let's get to the show. All right, what's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Weight Room Wealth Podcast. This is the first one we've done in, I think exactly a week or maybe slightly over. I was in Sedona, Arizona last week enjoying the beautiful red rocks of Sedona. I mean, it's a really incredible place. So we were out there, a lot of cool stuff, and I think there's some cool stuff that we'll probably share on this podcast as well. But I wanted to get to today was something that we had a request for, I believe it was last week or 2 weeks ago, was to discuss some of the neuroscience behind social anxieties and things of that nature. So right out of the gate, it's important to understand that this is not something that I have studied. This is something that I've come across in my studies. This is something that I've seen a good bit of. Just because I'm studying the brain, I'm studying psychology. So these are things that come up. There's things that there are concepts and theories that have alluded to this kind of stuff. They have alluded to anxieties. I know that some of the things that like PTSD kind of fall along very similar pathways. So what I'm going to teach and what I'm going to talk about here today are some of my thoughts, some of the things that I've gathered. I wouldn't consider it official by any means, just some of the puzzle pieces that I've put together myself that have given me some inclination as to what is going on behind anxiety from a neuroscience perspective. Take that however you want it. I'm not certified to talk about, or I'm not certified to treat anybody in this world, and I certainly wouldn't advise people in this space. This is just the information that I've come up with over time and how I've put the pieces together myself. And then you can do whatever you want with that information. So now to really express to you what I understand about this, I want to tell you a story about, this is one of the coolest moments of my life. So back in 2016, I was living down in Mobile, Alabama. I was the AA strength and conditioning coach for the Arizona Diamondbacks. And we were out in Montgomery, Alabama, and I got a call to interview for the Los Angeles Lakers. And it was a really cool deal. And I had a bunch of conversations that I had kept to myself because I didn't want to really put it out there in case it didn't come to fruition. And I also didn't want to just have that out there for, you know, my bosses and everybody else to know that I'm potentially going to leave. So I didn't tell anybody for a while. And, once it started to look pretty serious and they invited me out for an interview, that's when I decided it was a pretty good idea to tell everybody that I was working with, tell our, the team, the manager of the AA team, the coaching staff, because I was going to have to fly out to LA on an off day to go interview. And just in case planes got delayed, they needed to know where I was if I, wasn't going to make it to the next game. And we only have one off day in baseball. So there's not a lot of time in between to make these things happen. So started letting everybody know. And as you may or may not know at this point, it worked out pretty well. I ended up getting the job with the Lakers, and it was cool. And what I remember like going back and like telling the coaches. I remember I got the job. We were in Mobile in the weight room. They called me to let me know I got the job, and we were having batting practice at the time. So I walked out to batting practice behind the cage, and the coaches were just kind of there like working with the guys. And I just walked up and kind of like just slipped it to him, like, hey, I got the job. And like they were pumped, like high fives, hugs and stuff. And we actually didn't tell the players. I just wanted to keep it to myself. I don't want to brag about it. I don't want to be a distraction. Like I want to do my job. I want to fulfill my responsibility with the Diamondbacks and the Mobile Bay Bears and then move on to the next spot. So I just like, don't tell anybody. Let's just go through the season and that's that. So the season is wrapping up. We're in our last series. We're in Jacksonville, Florida. And you know, again, like the players didn't, you know, had no idea. The coaches were super pumped. I mean, it's big news. Like, we're all trying to get to the big leagues. I didn't get to the MLB, but I got to the NBA, which in a sense is relatively the same. And at the end of the game, the coach, the manager comes up to me and he says, you know, like, this was the last game of the season. Is it okay if I announce to the players that you're going to the Lakers? I said, yeah, sure. That's fine. No problem. And I remember like stepping into the clubhouse after the game and the coaches come in, you know how it goes, just the classic end of the year speech, you know, like we fought hard this year. It was a long season, a lot of ups, a lot of downs. When you keep your head, you know, hold your head up high, you know, the same crap. And I knew what he was going to do. And what was crazy to me was that my heart was just beating out of my chest. Like, of all the moments in my life and all of the, you know, the nervousness and asking girls out on dates and, you know, public speaking that I had done up to that point, nothing made me more nervous. Nothing made my heart pound like the anticipation of this moment. And as he's getting to it, I mean, you want to talk about like heart beating out of your chest. It really feels like this is the only moment in my life really where it felt like my heart was beating out of my chest. Like, I was like, is this safe? At the end of the speech, the coach says, you know, we had one guy get called up to the big leagues. And I knew he was going to say me, and my heart was just going crazy. It was going nuts. And he was like, it's Sean Light. You know, he accepted the job to become the assistant strength and conditioning coach for the Los Angeles Lakers. And the guys were pumped, man. They round of applause, high fives, giving me hugs, and everybody was really excited for me. It was really, really one of those moments. I will never forget that moment for the rest of my life. Like, it was so, so cool, and it just felt so good to go through that. But the reason that I tell you that story is because I want to teach you some science behind what was going on there. So in our world, you know, when you were in high school science class, you were taught about homeostasis. And homeostasis, you know, the way they describe it in, you know, high school biology is that it's the thermostat of your body. And that's an easy way to describe it and understand it. So if you get too hot, the homeostatic set point, like your body is set at 90, what was it, 90? What's the 98.5? What's the, I don't know what the, I'm surprised I can't think of that. But let's say it's 98.5 is the standard temperature of the human body. And that's why when you have a fever, it's a little high. When you have, I don't know what the opposite of the fever, with hypothermia, maybe you're low. And we don't really deviate too much off of that. It's really important and really vital to the operations of your system to stay at that temperature. So when you go up, when the body starts to overheat, you go in the sauna, you're exercising, you're playing hoops, your body will start to sweat, to perspire all over the body, so it cools down the body. On the flip side, if you get too cold, it starts to shiver. You develop goosebumps, and the idea is to create some motion so that it creates heat in the body and your body heats back up to that point. So we've come up with this, you know, high school biology model of homeostasis, and I'm not going to totally knock it. There are places in the body where it's really important. But what the inherent description of homeostasis is that once the body has these set metrics, and once the set point deviates from that metric, that's when the body kicks in and makes adjustments and moves and goes elsewhere. But as long as the set point stays still, you never even have, like, nothing's going to change. And that's where I want to deviate from the path. In this example of me, you know, them announcing to my team that I was going to get the job with the Lakers and I was leaving, no set point had changed, and yet dramatic changes inside of my body and the operations were ongoing. My heart was going crazy. It was pounding significantly harder. Like, imagine, like, think about, like, when you're just sitting down watching TV, you don't even feel your heartbeat. But in this moment, it's going 180 as hard as it possibly can, and it's pumping with real force, right? But the thing that you have to understand is that nothing happened to make that change. Nothing happened whatsoever. The only thing that changed was I knew what was about to happen. My thoughts changed. I was anticipating the events ahead, and that is what led me to have these physiological changes inside of my body. That's where we come into this model of allostasis, homeostasis versus allostasis. Allostasis is like level two of homeostasis. It is what I call predictive physiology, because what your body is doing, it is predicting what is going to happen in the next moment, and it's trying to prepare for that in advance. Here's a good example of that. Here in New York City, most people here, to get their groceries, if they're not getting them delivered, they're going to go out to the grocery. They're going to walk down the street to the grocery store. They're going to carry a couple reusable bags with them. They're going to load up those bags, and they're going to come all the way home. They're going to walk six blocks back from the grocery store. They're going to go up to their fourth floor walk-up apartment, up to four stories of steps. They're going to come in, and they're going to lug it through the door, up the stairs, through their apartment door, and then they're going to drop the groceries on the kitchen table. Now, what's happening in this process is they're spending six blocks. Let's say it's 15 to 20 minutes carrying these groceries. So when they put these groceries down and then they pick up a coffee mug to get a sip of coffee, that coffee mug feels like a feather. It feels incredibly light. And the reason it feels incredibly light is because you have spent some time under tension, and the allostatic response in the body is to predict what's going to happen in the next moment and prepare in advance for that. So that's why it feels super light, because you spent 15 minutes carrying, let's say, 60 pounds of let's say 30 pounds of groceries. And because you spent 15 minutes in there, the body's predicting that in the next moment, you're going to need that as well. So when you pick that up, it is prepared for that coffee mug to be just as heavy as the groceries, but it's not. So it feels super light. Imagine you're hiking now through Glacier National Park in Montana, and you spend 6 to 7 hours of your day hiking with a big backpack on, with water, supplies, a tent, food, extra boots, extra socks, a fire stick, bear spray. You have all this stuff in your sack. And then you keep walking for 6 to 8 hours, and you finally get to your campsite, and you shed that backpack, and all of a sudden you have now spent, you feel like light as a feather. You feel like you can jump 55 inches in the air. You feel light on your feet, like you feel incredible. And the reason is because your brain is predicting, based on previous experience, what it's going to need in the next moment. And the reason, so if you look at the groceries example next to the hiking example, the light as a feather coffee mug might last for 5 seconds. But the light as a feather feeling might last for 5 minutes. And the reason that there's a difference is because you've spent more time under tension in the hiking example than you did in the groceries example. So if you spend 8 hours with the backpack on your back, the refractory period afterwards, which is the amount of time that you would feel that adaptation, you would feel that difference, would be longer. So the question then becomes, listen to this. The question then becomes this: if you spend a year, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, in a state of vigilance, in a state of fear, in a state of nervousness, that is a year, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, in time under psychological, emotional tension. And that is going to produce a period of time where the brain will then try to predict, based on previous experience, what it's going to need and what it's going to look like in their next moment. Now, to give you a little bit more, I don't want to dive straight into anxiety here, because I think I have another example that's an offshoot of this, and it's hypertension, high blood pressure. I read a book called Allostasis, Homeostasis, and the Cost of Physiological Adaptation, and they're explaining this concept of allostasis. And the primary example that they give is high blood pressure, hypertension. And what they're talking about is that the people who have troubled childhoods, if they don't have parents who are good parents, and they're not there for them and teaching them and showing them the ropes. And, you know, I think about like a mama bear and her cubs. Like, she's always with them, like showing them how to do things, showing them how to hunt, showing them how to eat. If you are in a situation where your parental figures are kind of leaving you to your own vices or your own devices, you will grow up in a state of hypervigilance. And ever since you were a kid, you've had to fend for yourself. You weren't able to rely on somebody else. So when you were from a very early age, you are in this state of vigilance. And in a state of vigilance, you are in a fight or flight standpoint. Your blood pressure will raise. Now, that is what you're supposed to do in a hypervigilant state. But the problem becomes is if you spend a year, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years. Think about the people who start getting diagnosed with high blood pressure at 40, at 50, at 60. What we're actually seeing is chronic vigilance now not being able to stop because you've spent your whole life in this state of mind with these events happening. And now your body is just saying, based on the previous experience that I have, this is what I'm predicting is going to happen in the next moment. I'm predicting that I'm going to need a state of vigilance. I'm predicting that I'm going to need to be a little bit more careful and cautious and organized because I can't rely on anybody else because I've been conditioned to do so in this process. So then the question becomes, if I take high blood pressure medication, which is designed to lower my heart rate, am I actually getting to the root of the problem? The answer is clearly no. Because the problem is the chronic vigilance. The chronic is the emotional need, the inability to emotionally rely on somebody else, to be able to relax, to be able to take a load off, to be able to put that proverbial hiking backpack down and just relax for a little bit and be able to not have to be so concerned and uptight and tightly wound about certain things. So then the question becomes, well, how do you actually treat high blood pressure? Because what we know then is if as soon as we take the backpack off, there's still going to be a significant period of time afterwards, once that backpack's off, that you feel the effects of it. You will still feel you'll still feel the high blood pressure. You'll still present that way because the body is predicting what it's going to need in the next moment. So we're looking at a much more holistic approach to hypertension, a much more holistic approach to curing and treating high blood pressure. Now, again, the reasons that I've understood this over time is because I'm looking at human performance. I'm looking at how can I get a hamstring to turn on chronically? How can I get an oblique to fire chronically? How can I get a left oblique to catch up to a right oblique that is predicting what's going to need in the next moment? That's how I've come up with all of these things. That's how I've discovered this over time. So when we're starting to look at social anxiety, we have to start thinking about, why is the body producing this? Why is the brain producing that? And anxiety, in a nutshell, the way I understand it, is fear of the future. Okay? Now, why would you chronically be afraid of the future? Why? And now, if we want to break down the fears of what, like the chemicals of fear, understand that this is just, like that emotion is just a chemical that's being released inside of the body. So if you're experiencing that chronically, you are chronically releasing that chemical inside of the body. Now, you want to break it down even further. We're talking about neuronal connections. We're talking about neural networks inside of the body that are just chronically firing based off of your previous experience. So in order to make the shift, in order to make the change, what we really need to do is we need to fire new neural networks. Let's say that you have neural network A and neural network B. Neural network A is anxiety. If I fire that, it drips out the anxiety chemical. Neural network B, let's say that's performance, all right? So this is, or let's just say it's happy, right? All right, so neural network B is happy, neural network A is anxiety. I need to fire neural network B instead of neural network A. So let me walk you through your normal morning routine. Your alarm goes off roughly the same time every single day. Your body, every cell inside of your body has a circadian rhythm. So without with an alarm or without it, every cell is going to get activated inside of your body based on that circadian rhythm and the routines that you've put yourself through. So let's say you wake up on Monday, 6 o'clock in the morning. First thing you do is you hit snooze. You always hit snooze for, you know, three times, and then you get up. You slip your feet into your favorite slippers. You walk out the door the same exact way. You walk to your bathroom. You go to the bathroom. You check your phone. You check Instagram. You brush your teeth. You turn on the coffee pot. You have the same exact blend of coffee. You pour it into the same exact mug. You do it in the same exact way. You sit in the same spot while you read the newspaper. You read the same newspaper from the same writers. Then you go into the your car. You grab your keys that are in the exact same spot. You put it in the ignition. You back up. You listen to the same morning show. You drive the same way to work. You when you get to work, you walk into the door the same way. You say hi to the same coworkers. You go do the same daily tasks every single day. You complain about work at lunch and you eat the same thing for lunch every day. Then you go back to work and you do the same thing. And then you go home the same way. You go to the gym the same way, where you do the same exercises and the same routines. And then you go to the shower, where you always start with your left arm. Then you go to your right arm. Then you go to your chest. And then you go to your left leg. Then you go to your right leg. And then you turn the shower off with the same exact hand. And then you step out of the shower and then you dry yourself off, always starting with your left foot up to your left leg, then your right foot down. Up to your right leg, then your left arm, chest, your right arm. Then you put your lotion on in the same pattern. You watch the same TV shows. You eat one of the five meals that you cook every day. You go to bed right before you go to bed. You check the same social media apps that you follow the same exact people. And then you go to bed. And then the next day you do it all over again. Now, the entire time you're doing that, you're firing off the same neural networks all day, every day, forever. That will produce chronically the same results that occur based on the chemical drip off of firing those neural networks. If you indeed want to change, you have to find a way to change the neural networks that you're firing. Now, let me ask you this question. I asked this while I was sitting down with a real estate CEO about a month ago, and I asked him this question. I said, what would happen if you woke up tomorrow morning, put your slippers on, you went to the bathroom, you checked your phone, you went to brew your coffee, and you were out of coffee, or your wife finished all the coffee? What would you do? What would you say? How would you feel? He's like, I would be pissed. I would be furious that she took all my coffee. Now I got to go. I got to wait another hour before I have coffee. My whole day is ruined. Well, why is your whole day ruined? It's because you're so chronically used to firing off neural network A that is making you feel a certain way, a way that you choose to feel every single day by firing off the same thing every single day. Humans are routine-based creatures. And when you do that the same day over and over and over again, you always fire the same neural network. But as soon as you didn't have the coffee, you step into the unknown. You fire a new neural network because now you no longer feel like yourself. You're no longer doing the same activities, and you have to produce actions and responses in a different way. No longer can your brain be on autopilot. Things have to change because you've changed the routine, thus having to change what neural networks you're firing, which will thus change the chemical drip, the emotion that will flow outside of that network, and that chemical emotion will reinforce a different action, and that different action will produce a different result. So what I want you to understand from an anxiety standpoint is that what's probably happening is that your body, your brain is predicting what it's going to need in the next moment based on previous experience and the time under tension that you have spent firing off that neural network. In order to change and get a different result, you have to fire off a different neural network. And the easiest way to do that is just do different stuff. If you always turn left outside of your building, turn right. Even if it takes you 5 extra minutes to get back on track, turn right. Because as soon as you turn right, you're gonna see new stuff. And those new things are going to fire new neural networks. And those new neural networks is going to produce a different emotion. That different emotion is going to produce a different action. And that different action is going to produce a different result. Good or bad, it will just not be the same. And then we can go into how can we do these things to explicitly produce positive results, which is exactly what we do at Weight Room Wealth, and my entire company, my entire life is based around that. But that's neither here nor there. We need you to just start firing different neural networks to produce that cascading effect that will result in different results based off of the neuro composition of predictive physiology, these neural networks, and what those things produce. The other thing, and I think a really easy way for you to do this, a really easy way to start to take the first step here, aside from just doing things differently, like if I'm in your shoes, I'm going to wake up and I'm going to, you know, put different shoes on. I'm going to wait to have coffee. I'm going to change my morning routine. The first thing I'm going to do is a cold shower. Or the first thing you do is you sit down and you meditate. And when you sit down and you meditate, you just relax. All right, and you just let those thoughts come up. You're not trying to clear your mind or anything, but you're just trying to overcome the neural network A thoughts that are just coming to you, right? When you sit down, you are going to fire those neural network A's because those are the automatic responses. That's what your brain is predicting is going to need in the next moment. It's all the same thoughts that you've always produced off of the same networks, off of the same cascading approach. So when you sit down and you close your eyes and all those thoughts come up, those are just neural network A. But the more that you overcome those, the more that you just relax and you just sit there, the more that your brain will realize that these are not the important action-producing thoughts and will literally begin to deconstruct those neural networks. And you'll be able to mentally rehearse yourself into new neural networks because the brain cannot tell the difference between actions that are or you know, events that happen in your brain and events that happen in your real life. So in conclusion, before I get too complicated with all of this, the things that I want you to take away from this is that the brain is a prediction machine, and it is going to make its predictions based on the experiences that you've had over the course of your life. The more voluminous those experiences have been, the more time under tension you have spent in those experiences, the longer the period will be where you are feeling the effects of that, whatever that may be, whether it's light, you know, feeling light after a long hike and shedding your backpack, or whether that's hypertension after years and decades of chronic vigilance, or whether that's anxiety after you know, years and decades of you know, weird things happening and unfortunate life events and fearful events happening in your life. The brain is just going to predict what's going to happen in the next moment. My advice to you is to understand that this is just mechanical. This is not you. This is not who you are. This is just the brain trying to protect who you are. And when you see that, when you feel that, the events that are happening and the emotions that you feel become more mechanical. They become separate. They become separate from who you are. So understand that it's mechanical. Understand that this is the way that the brain is happening when you feel those anxious scenarios. After that, begin to intentionally fire off new neural networks. Change your routine. Meditate. It just, you don't even have to clear your mind. Just continue to overcome and just recognize that those thoughts are just the thoughts of that neural network and begin to intentionally create the thoughts and mentally rehearse the thoughts and the emotions of the new neural network that you intend to create. It may sound a little woo-woo. It may sound a little hippie. I know meditation always falls into that category, but the science is there. The science is clear. If you mentally rehearse something, the brain cannot tell the difference. So understand those mechanics of it. And that is my belief. That is my understanding of what social anxiety is, how it is produced. I also think that PTSD is quite a bit similar to this. Obviously, I think hypertension and high blood pressure is very similar to this. And I think there's a lot of things. I think there's a lot of, quote, mental challenges, mental disorders that people deal with that is not a broken brain, but it's an allostatic brain, a predictive brain that's predictions are making you uncomfortable, that are making you unsettled, that are challenging you in a different light. But understand that it's mechanical. Understand that it's neural networks just firing off and predicting what's going to need in the next moment. And if you can just stay consistent and intentionally build these new neural networks, you can intentionally create a new life. You can create intentionally create a new person. You can intentionally create new results. And that's what I'm really hoping that everybody can do. So thanks so much, guys. Really appreciate you listening. Remember, everything that we do here is going to be recorded and archived in the Weight Room Wealth podcast, anywhere that you listen to podcasts. And on Thursdays, we go live for Sorry We're Closed, me and my brother, where we talk about a wide range of business topics. And we're hoping to bring some guests into that as well. We've got some really cool ones that, like, really, really big dog, really cool guests that we're looking to, we're, you know, chatting with to try to get into that. So thanks again, guys. And we'll see you back here tomorrow for the next episode of the Weight Room Wealth podcast. Thanks so much. Thanks so much for listening to the Weight Room Wealth podcast. If you want to dive deeper into the science of achievement, head on over to weightroomwealth.com and get started for free. Don't forget to drop us a rating and subscribe so we can continue to bring you amazing guests and help more people. I'm Sean Light, and I will see you in the next episode.